Hello and welcome to Music Works, a podcast by Polyphony Arts. We're talking about the future of the classical music industry with some great guests. Thank you for joining us.
This episode is an extract from a much longer conversation I had with Ella, from which we created the second episode of this podcast. In it, we range across several topics from what it is to be a woman working in the music industry to Ella's creative process and how she composed our jingle, which you hear at the beginning and end of every episode. We decided that we would use the latter topic for episode two because it related so closely to the creation of the podcast, but we promised ourselves that the discussion we had had about women and creativity and the challenges of coping with family and work was so good that we would come back to it in a future episode, and this is it. I hope you enjoy listening to it as much as we enjoyed recording it.
Hello, welcome to Music Works, a podcast by Polyphony Arts. I'm Katie Beardsworth, and this week we're talking to Ella Jarman-Pinto. Hi, Ella.
Hi, Katie. Hi.
Thank you so much for coming. Ella is a film and TV composer, and we've been working together for a while now on various projects, including writing the music for this podcast.
Yeah. So
I'm very excited to talk to Ella today about various things to do with podcasts and composing in general. So where do you want to start? Shall we start by talking about... So Ella has also recently started a podcast.
Yeah.
It is absolutely amazing. It is definitely my favourite podcast that I've ever listened to.
Oh, wow, that's so kind of you. That's like so kind of you.
Absolutely brilliant. It's called Beyond the Chameleon. And do you want to tell us a bit about it, Ella?
Yeah, so Beyond the Chameleon is one of those ideas that you get in your head that you can't get out of your head, and it's like you can find your feet walking towards a cliff edge and you don't really know why you're keeping going in that direction, but hey, you need to go in that direction. That's basically this podcast for me. Just absolutely driven to create this podcast, and it's about... It's called Beyond the Chameleon, Conversations on Belonging in the Creative Media Industries, and the first idea for it came when I read the statistics of female composers in the TV and film industries. And, well, I think it was film for this one. Basically, really, this person had really kind of created a very succinct list of the stats of women in the industry and female composers, which is like down there. Basically, I was furious. I was absolutely furious.
What's
I was thinking, like, what is the point? You know, what is the, I don't understand why women aren't in this industry, because women in this industry, women in the world are 50%, you know, and women create incredible music. And if you don't know their music, then you need to know their music. And if you know their music, you need to hire them. I mean, it's as simple as that. I just spoke to Aral C Productions, which is an all-female team. And they're just hit their fundraising target to go out to, I can't remember the country, but to go out and to basically talk to sex worker unions about it, how COVID has impacted the lives of sex workers who do not have any workers' rights. And so it was just, I mean, we ended up talking about periods and period pain. It was like, you know, I was sort of sitting there going, am I sharing too much? And then I also thought, well, I would love to hear this. So we'll just keep going.
Absolutely. It's amazing how we discover our own potential, like, limits though, isn't it? Because I got pulled into a conversation on... There's literally so much in what you've said. This is probably not the direction to go immediately from this, but just as a tiny aside, my business coach pulled me into a conversation about period pants on LinkedIn because we talked about them and we're both massive advocates of them. And she was like, oh my God, Katie Beardsworth will be into this. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I want to talk about this on LinkedIn though. And then, I was like, on a private call, it's fine. Yeah. And then I was like, no, I'm going to do it because it's a thing that I think, and I don't want there to be things that I think that are said and then other things that I think that are not said. I mean, obviously,
I know what you mean.
Apart from the ones that are wrong or silly.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Not. I mean, like, there's this woman on LinkedIn who I follow who is talking about, you know, she's the things that she writes are so empowering over kind of periods and the anatomy of women and basically, you know, the struggles that people go through and the fact that no one knows about it. There's no science behind it. No one really knows. No one really cares. And she puts such amazing posts up, and I do not have the guts to like them or comment on them. And I feel like one day I need to send her a private message just being like, please keep going. I love what you're doing. I'm just not sure if I want to put it out there. But at the same time, that's not right. That's not fair on her. That's not fair on other women, because the more I comment, the more other women and menstruating people see it. So, you know, and benefit from it. So, that's made my... I'm set now. I'm going to do that.
Yeah, I know. It's funny, isn't it? It's funny how important that feels, because, like, it's like a quarter of our lives almost. And it's like completely largely taboo. I mean, it's a lot better than it used to be. And also, and I'm probably not going to talk about periods for the entire podcast.
But the thing that I think is so important. I drew you in.
Yeah, I know. I was like, maybe we will. But but the thing that I think is absolutely, I actually believe that periods are the absolutely one of the most fundamental differences between men and women, more than physiologically, because I believe that women are used to being cyclic and used to going through change all the time, and kind of so constantly adapting to change, but also being aware that although you're feeling something now, it's not, you know, it won't be next week, but then it will be in 4 weeks or however long, you know. So it's that kind of constant adaptation, and I think that's absolutely critical to women as business people, as creative people, as everything that we are. And I actually believe that this makes women better at those things in general, because we're more adaptable. That means we're less fixed. And obviously, that's not to say that all women are better than all men, of course. But I just think that this sort of, like, I've often felt as a woman in various kind of workplace situations that there are things that I understand that the room just doesn't seem to understand, or that isn't, like, really acknowledged somehow. And it's not really so much about specific concepts as it's just like a sense of how things could be done differently. And I actually believe that a lot of that is due to periods and cycles and being able to be in a constant state of flux and change.
There is no staying the same for a woman, is
there?
No staying the same. And, you know, I actually spoke about this with the recording I did yesterday, but and now I can't remember. Oh no, you know when you're grasping onto it, you're like, no, don't go, I was about to stay.
Yeah, it gets replaced by like the Postman Pat theme tune, doesn't it?
Oh no, like, yeah. Totally in there now.
I know, oh god, my son's obsessed with Postman Pat at the minute. It's literally all I can hear all the time.
Oh no, it's in my head now.
Sorry.
But it's all right. No, but what I think what I was, it was something you said, something about cyclical. You know what? I'm going to have to come back to this.
We can come back to it.
Yeah, we'll come back to it. It was a really good point.
Well, if it was a great point, it will resurface. It'll come around again.
It will come around again. But yeah, I mean, it is, you know, you're right. There is that kind of the cyclical thing. And that was it. I was invited to a think tank. There we go.
Oh, great.
I was invited to a think tank, and I sort of was, oh, okay, that's really interesting about, you know, getting more women into the industry, into technology, and kind of making change, like future defining change. And I looked at all the points that this person was making, and she had some really interesting points, but a lot of it was like, should we be stopping women's periods? Should we be helping women to recover from childbirth more quickly? Should we be doing this? Should we be doing that? Should we, for those who want to keep the periods, should we be like helping them manage the hormones better? And I was like, oh, I think you've missed the point.
Oh, so
like,
many.
You're trying to get women
so
to fit
views.
Into a man's world.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
We don't want women to fit into a man's world. We want men to understand that actually women have these things, and we want the world to fit around women and their needs.
And they're not a bad thing. They're not an inconvenience, or there are inconvenient aspects of them, but that's largely to do with being managed more than them actually existing at all. And
managed,
you know, I think,
because we're not ever allowed to just be with them.
Yeah.
We have to, like,
pretend everything's they don't all exist. About recovery. I mean, you mentioned birth recovery. That's just, you know, I'm just like,
oh, yeah,
wishing, I mean, this like, podcast was about birth so that, yeah, we get in it. The idea of speeding up birth recovery is so toxic.
As I can't, and I just, absolutely. Like, God, and, no. You know, and also, I mean, yes, support women to recover from birth better, but not to speed it up and get the back of the workforce. That's,
yeah, exactly. So, oh, it's like, just, not as a return to some kind of norm or,
no.
Yeah.
No.
Oh God.
I love that we've come from periods to birth, because
yeah.
The reason why I chose you as my agent was because I looked at your about me and you're like, I'm a part-time doula and lactation peer support. And I was like, yes. I'll work with you.
I love that. I love that when you mentioned it. I was like, oh, my tribe has found me.
Yeah.
It's just so nice. And that was actually really, it was really important to me to be able to say those things, because and it's funny that we come to this in the context of talking about a podcast, which is essentially about belonging.
Yeah.
Because when I wrote my biography for my website for Polyphony Arts, which is my business, with my first business, it's been called other things, but essentially this is my first business. I actually went through a huge process of deciding what to put in it and having to go through a load of mindset situations where I was like, can I put that in a professional biography? Because every single time I've written a job application or a biography for a website for a job, you know, a company website or something like that, I've been like, well, they don't care if I like cats or, you know, yeah, whatever. And I was kind of, and at the time when I wrote it, I'd just finished doing the doula training, which I did with an amazing company in Hull called Goodwin, and their doula training is absolutely incredible, literally life-changing training. And I loved it. And as part of it, we had to go to a session on FGM, female genital mutilation. And I was quite fresh out of that session when I wrote the biography. And I remember having a discussion with my husband about whether to put it in, like that I actually had received kind of like awareness training about this issue, about which I had been relatively badly informed. I was aware of what it was, and I was aware that it was a problem and a wider spread problem than I had come across in my life. But that was it, and now I'm much more aware of what the situation is there, and was completely, I had to do a lot of quite grueling training as part of this, including like child safeguarding stuff and various other things, but this was obviously by far the worst. I just remember feeling like it had profoundly changed me, like this understanding of something that it's not really in my culture at all, although it is a lot closer to home than people think it is. Mm-hmm. I just remember feeling like it was such a significant thing that I knew about this now that it had to go in there. And in the end, I just put it in there. I was like, well, sod it. You know? My biography, it's my website. And if I think it should be there, then it's going in.
Yeah.
And as far as I know, I haven't lost any clients.
Well, you gained one. You gained one. I mean, you know, like the reason why I found you, because I put out, it's like, I'm ready to start my career. I want to move forward, but I know I need help. And I was inundated on the Doing It For Kids community chat. I was inundated with all of these things, these people. And I just thought, oh, I don't know how to choose. And then I saw yours and I went, there we go. That's all done. Yep. this is someone I want to work with. You know, this is someone I trust implicitly, because just by saying, you know, for those who don't know what a doula is, it's essentially someone who supports a woman through childbirth. And there's no glory in the role, really, is there? It's not about you in any way. It's about you being there for someone who is at their most vulnerable state in a time when they need to be protected as much as possible from outside intervention. And when I say outside intervention, I'm talking about like someone asking them, do you want pain relief or something like that? You know, like at the most basic level, you know, regardless of the other things. So, and for me, it just spoke mountains about you, that this was something that you felt was incredibly important and important enough to put in your bio. It was just like, you care for other people. You care for other people. You care to support those who need that extra support. And having experienced a doula for myself for both of my births, and unfortunately not for my first one, but I wish I had for my first one, and the other two was why I had the doula. you know, just knowing that there's that person there and they're just there for you and they're to look after you. And yeah, I was just like, yep, this is a person I like. This is, it told me so much. It told me so much. And I really feel like you bring that to all of the work that you do within Polyphony Arts as well. It's all about caring for the people you're working for. So yeah, I made a good decision.
That's so kind. That really means a lot. That's certainly what I hope to bring. And that is what, I mean, being a doula is, it's sad since I've moved location, I'm not able to volunteer for that project anymore because it's based in Hull and a similar volunteering project doesn't exist elsewhere. So it's kind of, yeah. I'm not sure yet whether it's completely in the past or whether there's a way forward for it. But it's certainly, it's taught me a lot more than I was expecting to learn. You know, yeah. I think I went into it thinking I would like do some encouraging hand-holding and tea making for women who needed some extra support, and what I was actually presented with was a whole world of the potential things that women can go through in life. I mean, it's like childbirth but having children, it brings together all the potential vulnerabilities that a person can face because everything is important. So yeah, it's been hugely kind of enormous learning experience, I think, and it's definitely not it's not one-sided in the sense that I get an awful lot from it. I feel like I've learned more from each mum that I've supported than I have from a lot of other educational things I might have gone, have gone through in my life. It's really nice when something that's important to you is also important to your clients. I think that's a really nice kind of thing to have.
But I feel like this is something that is often overlooked in music and the music industry, you know, this kind of community, either community-based work or personal development, or even just being a mum, you know, or being a parent, or having to care for somebody, you know, and care for somebody, you know, not fully, you know, having something that means that you are in a slightly different situation to that society kind of assumes you are in. Does that make sense? So like, a lot of the time, I mean, I've never hidden my kids. I've never said, oh, I don't have kids, because I was like, I'm never gonna do that. I'm gonna create my entire life around them because that's my goal. That's what I wanna do. But I know that there aren't that many, you know, it's changing now, but at the time when I first started in this career, when I was like 21, I basically saw my tutor have a child, come back to work for 6 months, and then, you know, I also have to say I was probably part of the problem. I didn't, you know, she was a great tutor. I just didn't know how to open up and be vulnerable, basically. But, you know, like I was definitely part of the problem, and I definitely saw her having a child as a problem because I felt that she changed. I was drawn up by my head of year going, you can't say that, Ella. I'm like, well, I can, I've said it. And you know, and I was like, but the thing is, what I was saying was valid was that she's had a child, she's changed. But I wasn't, and I was seeing it negatively, but actually what I was saying was she's changed, and she had changed, but the situation around hadn't allowed for that change for her.
Exactly.
And so I was bringing something up that was, you know, I shouldn't have said, but actually I wish I had been able to understand and be kinder around it, but I was noticing something going on there. And I feel really sad that she wasn't able to continue in that environment at that time, because that would have been a great role model for me. And so when I had my kids, it was very much a case of, I think I was artist in, composer in residence for, Streetwise Opera, in Newcastle Gateshead. And I got the call for an interview while I was walking along pushing my 4-month old. And I was like, you want me to come down this Thursday? It's Tuesday. Can I bring my kid? Yeah. And they were like, well, it would be good to be able to talk to you without the kid in the interview. But I mean, if you need to, you can. You know, we want to see you, basically. I was like, okay. So I traveled to London with my 4-month-old and had my friend just push him around the bottom of King's Place. Not King's Place. King's Cross. While I had this really terrifying interview. Like baby brain and everything. And you know, so yeah,
so it was, you feel so torn. Though.
Yeah,
like literally so torn. I had an interview like that when I was, I think I was still on maternity leave, but he wasn't that young. He was maybe like 8 months or something, and my son that is obviously, and and we went to Leeds. We were living in Hull. We went to Leeds for an interview, and my husband took the day off work so that he could. Come and look after our son while so that I didn't have to take him into the actual interview. Which, you know, I mean, I'm sort of massively in favor of people being able to do stuff with their kids if they're comfortable with it, because I just think like it's all about where your brain's at. My brain does better when my son is happily looked after elsewhere, because I find the diverting of attention really, really difficult. So that was better, but I would always, if somebody like wanted to bring their kid to someone or something, I'd always just be like, fine, because there's nobody that it inconveniences more than the parent, frankly, if it's difficult. You know, like I always say, if there's a kid screaming on a train or in a restaurant or something, yeah, it can be annoying for people who aren't its parents, but there is literally nobody who is feeling that more than the child's parents at the time. Like, there's no way. But yeah, I did had a great experience once where I took my son to a conference, and I hadn't intended to, but I had a childcare issue on the day, and I took him, and I felt like the worst mum ever, but I just had like the world's biggest gingerbread man. This was only for, this is like for like a 2-2.5 hour session. I had like the world's biggest gingerbread man. I had kids TV on my phone, like everything, every trick in the book, and he just it was so funny because I just went and I got loads of fuss made of me because I'd brought this, it wasn't exactly a baby, I can't remember how old he was, about 18 months, and then he just went to sleep. And I was like you could not, if I'd planned that it would never have happened. But yeah, there were a contrary lot, the gingerbread man remained, you know, mercifully untouched. But
I mean, I took, I was accepted onto the PRS and, I can't remember the name. It's not
Wild Plum.
It's not Wild Plum. Yeah, onto PRS and Wild Plum songbook. And I think this was just before we started working together, maybe a few months beforehand. And they were like, you know, can you come down for, it was a whole weekend thing, and they'd put you up and they paid for my travel, and she rang me, and at the time I was like, what am I, you know, when I applied I said I have a 6-month-old, or she will be 6 months old at the time, she's exclusively breastfed, we hadn't weaned her at the point, there's no way I can leave her at home. And we'd had such an issue with tongue tie, you know, she's not a bottle, couldn't even take a bottle if she wanted to, so it was like she has to be with me. And I had the call, you know, I had the call saying I got in. I was like, yeah, I've got in. And they're like, so are you able to make it? I was like, need to bring the 6-month-old with me. Is that all right? And then I said, you'll need someone to look after her. So I might need to bring my husband too. And then we don't have any extra childcare for my other son. We're probably going to have to bring him as well. And she absolutely did not bat an eye.
Oh, that's amazing.
This is Harriet Wybor at PRS. Yeah. She was incredible. And in the end, my husband and son stayed at home, and I had my sister-in-law and my sister take it in turns looking after the kid. And she did, I mean, my daughter did great things for my reputation. Everyone remembered me. I was the woman with the amazingly adorable baby who, you know, disappeared halfway through. And like, you know, they gave us a room. They gave us space to that I could feed her if I needed to. They fed my family who looked after her. Like, they were so good. And it's like that level of support, which didn't actually take much extra, didn't need much extra from them. They were like, what do you need? And I was like, just somewhere for them to sit that's warm, it'd be fine, you know, like otherwise it's all good. just meant I could take part in this incredible opportunity. And if they'd said no, I wouldn't have been able to do it. And we're missing so many people. We're missing so much talent if these things aren't put in place, creches on, you know, creches in the theatre or creches on a film set or, you know, like, it. I don't understand why this hasn't happened now as standard, you know.
I agree completely. These adjustments are just essential because it's incredibly difficult to take part in any kind of work, even if you make yourself kind of physically able to, like you can get yourself to a place to do some work. If you're worried about your child or your child's care arrangements aren't optimal, it's so, or even that, and then also feeling like you're not understood. And this is something I became sensitive to probably later. So I did quite a lot of like mediumly optimal work where it was fine and I could do it, but I was worried about him or something wasn't right, or I just felt like the people organizing it hadn't really understood what it was going to be like. And maybe I'm sure that's partly to do with me as well, because as a new mum it's very difficult for you to understand what you actually need, I think, especially if you're a first time mum, because you don't really know what's going to come up. I actually did a bit of a poll with, I did a blog series quite a while ago on freelance parents and like sort of like how they, and you wrote something for it. And I one of the people that wrote for it was a folk band musician who tours a lot, and his wife's in the band as well. So they're with their kids. They've got three now, but they had one at the time and the child was touring with them from like the age of nothing. And that's great. And, you know, I was like, fine. And I said, you know, this question was on the list of questions, like, what do you need? You know, what is the best that you've been provided with? What's the worst you've been provided with? All this kind of thing. And he was like, literally warmth and like running water of any temperature is a basic requirement you didn't think you'd have to specify, but you do, you know, with some of these things. In some ways, the classical music settings have it a bit easier than like folk festivals. But, you know, it's quite amazing what, you know, so it's like, yeah, maybe say you can bring your child, but don't actually, you know, provide any facility, like a nappy bin, God forbid.
Yeah.
too much.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's really tricky. And I don't believe that people should necessarily have to think of every last thing that they might need in a circumstance and ask for it all one by one, because that puts a lot of pressure on individuals. But I do think, because having children is such a kind of tentative thing and we're not really sure if we're allowed to talk about it in a workplace setting and so on and so forth, it's like really difficult for anyone to know what anyone else needs unless they happen to have been in that position themselves. And it's really difficult for parents to know what they need if they haven't, you know, seen people asking for it, you know, had experience of doing it, so
And you wonder why it's not taboo anymore, but it has been taboo, you know, having a kid and having to provide for that kid, you know. And I wonder, you know, when you see people go, oh, I shouldn't have to not benefit when, you know, this person has a child and they've benefited from maternity leave or something like that, you know, why should it bother me? It's like, well, it's the future of the human race.
Well, there is
it's
that.
It's as simple as that. You know, I mean, if you want to go back down to basics, like, essentially, we all care that the human race continues, so.
Well, and also, it's just all about choice, isn't it? Because I just, I mean, that viewpoint, which is quite widely held, is, I mean, yeah, if anyone presented me with the option to have a child when I didn't want one already, and I would get 9 months off work, if I did that, I don't think the 9 months off work would be the swaying factor.
No.
There's quite a lot more to it than that.
Absolutely.
It's really hard and all encompassing and great and wonderful, and it's just everything, isn't it? And and if you're not, if it's not for you, then, you know, missing out on a 9 month period where you're not working
I know what you mean, but the thing is you know, there are sabbaticals available. If you want 9 months of work, you can get a sabbatical, and it's like, so why begrudge someone 9 months of work to basically rear a child and raise a child and lose yourself with that child? Because that's what you do, you know, you're not yourself
absolutely
at the time. You're all about providing for this person. And this person's going to be, if you want to look at it really crudely and economically, this person's going to be a future taxpayer. They're going to be a future worker. That means that the other people who are begrudging it get their pensions, and, you know, they're going to contribute to society. They might care for you in your last days. You know, this child is important for the future as well as for the child, you know, and the family.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that what I was trying to say before and kind of got a bit sidetracked with is that we need to have choices as humans. And when you have a young child, working in the way you work before is impossible, and working at all, depending on what you do, is tricky. And so there is this maternity leave set up in order to cover that, but it's actually not for everyone either. Like, looking back at my maternity leave, I'm not sure it was the greatest thing for me. I didn't necessarily want to switch off my entire brain forever for a whole year, which is what it felt like.
Yeah.
And have society see me that way as well, as like on maternity leave, therefore basically like paused career-wise, which is, you know, essentially like going backwards, isn't it, really, at the end of the day? And, you know, I think more flexibility about how maternity leave can actually be done. And we're seeing some of that with shared parental leave.
But not with self-employed.
Well, you know, self-employed people just essentially have to, like, create it for themselves, don't they? And they get minimal to no support with that, but at least they do have more flexibility. Whereas I think, you know, employed people, I mean, I always had jobs. I've only been self-employed for 2 years. And I really was under the impression when I had my child that what I would do was I would go off for a year or 11 months, whatever it was. And then I would come back and I would do my job, probably potentially part-time or part-time for a bit and then full-time or whatever. But essentially I would have the same life as I had before, but instead of doing whatever it was that I genuinely have no idea what it was that I did in the evenings and at weekends before I had a child, I would be looking after my child. Do you see what I mean? So I'd be like, I look after my child, I go to work, I come back, you know, we have our family. We're not like young single people anymore, but, you know, that's life. Whereas it's not like that at all. So this is my answer to my view on when people say that if you go on maternity leave, you get kind of benefits that you don't get if you don't have a child. And I do sympathize with that to some extent, actually, because I do think it's all about choice. And I think that people who don't want to have children, if they want to take a career break for whatever reason, should be able to without damaging their careers, because that is essentially what happens when you go on maternity leave, isn't it? Usually, often. I think that maternity leave as a choice is vitally important. A vitally important part of having a child is to be able to get the space to be with them in their early life. But their early life is not 9 months to a year old. I mean, my son is 4 next month, and I'm still waiting for that feeling of being feeling as though I've been run over by a bulldozer to subside. And I'm not sure that it's going to happen anytime soon. So it's not just like that first year and then everything kind of smooths back over to some kind of new normal.
No.
And maternity leave as in like a full break to then coming back to some kind of work doesn't work for some people either. Some people would much rather work a tiny bit and then or whatever, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I was teaching. I was just teaching. I wasn't really interested in what I was doing, to be honest. I had the absolute minimum wage that I had, maternity allowance that I was getting from the government because of being self-employed, which you can't live on. I just spent spent money on reusable nappies and which, you know, my husband wasn't very pleased with. I mean, I found it like a really exciting, I really found my maternity leave to be really exciting and really interesting. And I was battling with a number of kind of emotional things going on. And so I just got out of the house every day. I went to every single playgroup that I could find. I had like a playgroup for every single day. If I was at home, I was not happy. I had to be out of the house. I ate out all the time. That's how I coped with my kid. That's how I coped with life.
It was exactly the same.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, I really, really feel for the women who and parents who have had their kids in lockdown, because like, I would have gone stir crazy. I did go stir crazy. But then when I went back to work, I really wanted to go back to work. I really wanted to build my teaching. I really wanted to learn and to do other stuff. And I did actually have to fight for my time, because in terms of money and, you know, my husband's career, and it wasn't a career, it was what he was doing to keep us afloat. But in terms of his teaching, he was like, well, I have to prioritize the money and you're not bringing in the money, so I'm going to work all the hours I can. And I'm like, well, could you at least like save me half a day? Save me half a day, and then I can work in that half a day and build what I want. He's like, yes, but I need to prioritize the money. I was like, yeah, don't work on that half a day. like, anytime he tried to put something in there, I was like, oh no.
Was he freelance as well?
Yeah, we were both freelance. Yeah, so we had to prioritize. Yeah. And then with my daughter, when she was born, I'd been working like fit to burst. I actually had to stop working at 32 weeks because I was ill. I had a really awful cough that just was really debilitating. I couldn't eat anything at the time. Like, water would set me off, and like, I could have to stop driving. That's how bad it was. Stop driving and like cough my guts out in the corner. And in the end, I was like, I can't do this anymore. I'm not sleeping. I can't breathe. I've got a toddler. The doctors are telling me to rest. I'm like, what am I gonna earn? But yeah, thanks for also saying that. And maternity leave was just maternity leave. I was looking forward to it, like I would have looked for, like I enjoyed my sons, but postnatal depression and having a toddler at home at the same time was just a completely different beast. So I'd really like, you know, a second maternity leave. That would be really great without having to have another kid.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, absolutely. You come back to work and you have another break because you're knackered.
Yeah, totally. It's funny, actually. Yeah. I was saying to my husband the other day, I was looking at, I think I'd watched some kind of program about like some kind of island in the Caribbean, and I was like, I think we should have a second honeymoon. Yeah. Like, let's not get married again, but I think we should just like consider honeymoons not to be a once in a lifetime opportunity. Yes. Because like, literally, why would you ever only want to do that once? And you know, I think that you know, having babies takes an enormous toll on mothers and parents, and I think that they deserve literally all the help they can get and a million gazillion times more than any government is offering at the moment. I genuinely believe that, but I do also think that anything where somebody is resentful of somebody else for having some kind of support probably indicates a lack of support for whatever it is that they want to do. Which is, and it is quite interesting in the context of a freelance or a music career, you know, because all of the trajectory can just be lost in an instant, really, on the tiniest thing. So these kind of inequalities are kind of, I don't know, sometimes I think freelancers have more control over them. And more ability to change things, because I do think, because I've been on the employed track and just been like, you work full time, you have a baby, you go maternity leave, you come back part time, you maybe do that until they go to school, whatever. I don't know, no idea how that would have worked out. And when I found myself not on that track anymore, I was like, the whole world of possibilities has opened up, and it was terrifying, and it still is terrifying, but it's also quite liberating. And my husband works for a local authority, and actually quite a forward-thinking and flexible local authority, I must say. They are loads better than some experiences I've had of workplaces, but there's still a rigidity of understanding of what working means and what work, like what flexibility is. Which is totally understandable when you're dealing with a large organisation with lots of people in it and a massive history of being completely inflexible. But, you know, I sometimes get frustrated, especially since lockdown, where I've been trying to deal with the very, you know, like with having a child at home throughout the lockdown, trying to manage stuff like that with the conflict between an entirely freelance job like mine, which I have loads of autonomy over, and a job like that working for a local council, has been really tricky. but then potentially in some way simpler than what you're describing with your husband, because at least, I don't know, the framework of my husband's job meant that there was somewhere to start. Yes. Whereas if you're trying to work out to prioritize between two careers, it could be anything.
Yeah. I mean, we really have had to have continuing conversations. But a lot of it comes down to, you know, fear and money and, you know, he was providing while I was looking after the kids. I mean, I'm a feminist. He knows I'm a feminist. We always talked about him being the guy who would stay home with the kids rather than me. So these are roles that we fell into. And I remember at one point when our son was born and I had all my friends complaining about their husbands and, you know, doing all the housework and doing all of this, doing all of that. Husbands come home, watch the telly, la, 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 la. And I was like, oh, well, I've got a really good deal. And then I was thinking, but my deal still ain't good. <You know? laughs> I remember turning to my other half and just turning to him and saying, do you want me to judge you by other people's experiences, by like how my other friends' husbands are? Or do you want me to judge you by how this is going and by how I feel you're doing? And he, you know, bless him, he turned to me and said, judge me how you feel this is going. I was like, this ain't working. But you need to step up.
Oh my goodness.
It's not enough.
That is amazing.
But now, I mean, it really does feel like it goes the other way now. You know, there are times when I turn to him and be like, can you stop doing the housework so I could feel like I could at least equalize it a little bit? Can you just, you know, like stop and spend time with us and stop trying to get everything perfect so that I can, you know, stop feeling like such a failure over the house. Oh, you know, so goodness. He's really gone the other way. Yeah. So, I mean, he stepped up, he's incredible. He took everything I said and he just, you know, ran with it. And, but, you know, in terms of career, it has, you know, we really have had to look at what we're doing and go, you know, does this light me up? Does this, you know, the work that he was doing, which was peri teaching, basically, you know, as a lot of musicians listening to this will relate to, doing a lot of peri teaching. And you know what? I mean, he's a good teacher, but did he enjoy it? No, it wasn't what he wanted to do for the rest of his life, but he didn't know what else to do. And we felt that as a family. We felt him coming home and not being inspired by what he was doing every day. And I'd sort of turn around when I had my daughter. I was like, well, I ain't doing any more of that. That peri teaching, that's enough. I need more autonomy. I need to be able to really respond to the kids and not have like, I think I was teaching in 2.5 days a week, I was teaching 100 kids.
Oh, good grief.
Yeah. It was awful.
Yeah.
It was awful. It was like, you know, in an afternoon, actually, you know what? In an afternoon, I had five groups and they were six. I think five or six groups, six of them. So I was teaching that many kids in one afternoon. And that was one afternoon. And it was just horrendous. And then when report time came along, I was just there heavily pregnant going, no! Having to do individual reports for every single one of these children of my 2.5 days a week. And you know,
yeah,
but it was I'm never doing that again, ever. I was so done. And yeah. And then I had to then justify my change of career to my other half, like, hey, I'm gonna really focus on composition, hey, I'm gonna go down the TV and film route because I could earn money down this route. And he's like, Ella's a pipe dream. That's a pipe dream, Ella. And it took probably, I think it took until maybe a year and a half for him to stop saying it's a pipe dream to me. And now he's going, now I'm turning to him going, it's a pipe dream. He's like, keep going, you're doing really well.
Oh, that's amazing. You know? Yeah.
So we have to keep having these conversations and keep, not yet. Sorry. we have to keep having these conversations and we have to keep readjusting where we are. And now he's at university, he's chasing his career and it's my job to keep things down. You know, it's my turn to keep the family going and my turn to support him in, you know, doing what he really wants to do, which is music therapy, and I totally support him on that. I think it's brilliant. Yeah. It's pretty, pretty hard, but it's really good.
Yeah, very hard.
These conversations, they just have to keep, we have to keep evaluating where we are.
And it can be so difficult because my husband had men have an awful lot of social messages passed on to them as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
As well as we do. And I think this one about being this kind of stalwart money provider is a huge one. And because my husband works for a council, that's even more like prevalent with our dynamic.
Yeah.
I'm just going to treat this a little bit like therapy. Yeah. And he feels so strongly, and it's true that he has the breadwinning role and that he has the stable job that doesn't rely on, you know, different clients doing different things and so on. And that is true. And that is enormously important for our family. But yeah, trying to negotiate, it's that thing of like, you have to be aspirational in order to reach the next step. So yeah, if you like say a year ago, if you'd looked at his income and my income and said who should take a period of leave or who should take on more caring responsibility or something, the figures would have very much said that it should have been me. But then like, it's not just about that, it's about people and like whole lives.
Yes.
And I would far rather spend 2 days a week doing something amazing than 5 days a week doing something mediocre.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, like the financial things so for example, with my husband, he was studying in Edinburgh before lockdown. And, you know, and he was saying, I need to get this, you know, I need to get this work done. I need to get this completed. I think it'd be better if I stayed in Edinburgh over the week, reading week, instead of coming home and having the time at home over the week, reading week. Or I should get the, you know, for money's sake, I should get the later train home from Edinburgh, which means that I won't be there in time to help you pick up the kids and put them to bed. But I should do that because it's like 10 quid cheaper and that will help our finances. And I was like, yep. And then basically on the verge of my breakdown, I was like, we kind of need to stop prioritizing finances here, because currently I can't cope with the third night in a row of putting the kids to bed on my own. I can't cope with not having a break from this, because you're not, you know, you're home for Christmas, but then you're away again. And, you know, there's no half term. There's no break within this sea of you just not being here. And I know I'm not individual. I know there are solo parents out there doing incredible jobs. And I know I'm not in any way, you know, the only person doing this and the only person experiencing their other half leaving. And that was really hard to kind of justify my feelings within that knowledge that I'm not kidding when it's like a couple of times I drove off, sat in a lay-by, like, I'm not coming home, not telling anyone where I am. I just need to be away. And not having any rest, just not having enough sleep, not having enough time for myself, and not really being able to have the understanding of myself or other people's understanding of what I was going through. And actually, you're right. Sometimes prioritizing the finances means you lose all of this connection. You lose the mental health. You lose the long-term ability to do this. And actually, we needed to think investment-wise rather than saving money-wise.
Absolutely. And then there's also the mental load, the maternal mental load is one of my favourite topics. And I'm aware we've already been talking for nearly an hour, so it may not be the best moment to get onto this. But all the in-between things that go with that division of labour is like, if you need to write something that's going to take you a whole week in digs in Edinburgh to write, then that's one thing. But actually, that is a whole week's worth of pickups and drop-offs and bath times and meal times and am I getting to watch TV times and like all of that. And I've had times where literally someone dealing with a single lunchtime with my son that I didn't have to deal with would have made all the difference.
Yeah,
just to, especially, you know, like a sort of,
yes,
one of those difficult lunch times.
Yes. Yes. I mean, Yeah, I mean, yeah. I have so much respect for solo parents because there's no off switch. You don't get to switch off and let someone else deal with it. You have to deal with everything there. Mm. And I have a close friend actually who is a solo parent and who teaches me every day what she does to get through. But she even turned to me and said, "But I almost think it's harder for you, Ella, because he keeps coming home. Like the things you put in place, he then doesn't know what they are. So he destroys that system, and then you have to recreate it again." And you know, to be absolutely fair to my husband, he would come home and spend 4 days blitzing the house so I didn't have to do it. You know, like he would come home and just take off from where he left and just get stuff done. But then also there's that resentment there because I would disappear off for a day on a weekend trying to kind of get myself back to myself, and he'd be like, "But I don't see you." And I'm like, no one, I don't want anyone to see me.
Yeah, so. Making time for all of the things. I really struggled with this in lockdown. You can't keep them all going. It was like both of our work, my son's well-being, fairly unquantifiable, yeah, piece of work there.
Yeah.
like looking after the house, you know, attempting to make it like borderline habitable. Mm. And then like anything else, like our own circuit, like when lockdown was at its kind of most locked down, we were both prioritizing a decent chunk of exercise for each of us each day because it was really, really essential. Or maybe not every single day, but most of the days. Like sometimes it didn't happen, but and that was really essential. But then we'd get to the end of a week and we'd go, "Oh, we've barely seen each other as a family." And then, and to be honest, the worst weeks were when we were attempting to do all those things, but to also spend time together, the three of us, because you can carve out the time, but you can't carve out the energy necessarily. Mm. And we were just sitting there and I was like, "Well, I don't know about him, but I definitely was wishing I was somewhere else." Not all the time, you know, just like, you know, when you're like, "God, I could just be in the bath right now, like on my own." Yeah. You know, and Rob could be, my husband could be dealing with the mental load of whatever is going on right now. Yeah. It's very, very tricky.
And because you're so, oh, sorry.
No, carry on. I'm just aware we haven't talked about the podcast.
I know. Should we talk about the podcast? Should we just do it? It's just like,
should we just switch. Do that? Yes. Yeah. We may not need every minute of what we've just discussed anyway. I kind of forgot we were recording that.
That was a great conversation. Sorry, I'm just treating it like my podcast. It's like, doesn't matter what we say.
I was debating in my mind whether my husband would listen to it or not, then thought probably not. So such a pleasure to work with you and so much appreciated. So I think we shall probably wrap it up there. Thank you so much for coming and talking to me. It's been really lovely to chat.
And you as well.
Great. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening today. To find out what we're up to, do join our mailing list or follow us on social media. And if you'd like to support the podcast by buying me a coffee, you can do that on buymeacoffee.com. Thank you so much. See you next time.